VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility. There's more to iPhone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Ruck, our weekly podcast. Thanks for downloading us. Thanks for listening to us. When we were last together with you, England were almost on top of the world. Things have changed. A week is a long time in politics and also in sport. We got a great panel today to go through all the aspects of it. Nigel, by the way, has been a colleague of mine at the Sunday Times for how long, Nigel? When was your first year as a writer?
Oh, it's got to be 20 years, Steve.
20 years ago. He was seven when he started. Nigel's a distinguished coach. His team, London Irish Colts, got a big win in the Cup on Sunday, thanks to his coaching, naturally. And also his programme, Fisherman's Blues, where Nigel shows probably, I think, his greatest strength. He's one of the most distinguished observers and fishermen in the fishing community in the UK. And you think I'm joking, don't you? But I'm not. The rest of the panel is incredibly fishy as well. We've got Nick Kane from the Rugby Paper. Nick, how long at the Rugby Paper?
A decade now.
A decade, and you were in at the start of the paper.
I was, absolutely.
And there are many publishing ventures in rugby that don't go so well, but quite good to mark a decade.
Very good, very good. And hopefully go from strength to strength.
And are the salaries as huge as they were at the start?
Absolutely. Breaking the ceiling at the moment.
Okay. And we've also got the dog man, Adam Hathaway. And there's great news from the greyhound scene, because Adam, after running two dogs for a long time, the success has gone to your head. Mm. Now you've now bought a third. What's the third one called?
I can't tell you that, I'm afraid. We've dipped into our massive transfer war chest. But what we're doing is, dog is going to meet the Sunday papers on Friday.
Right.
So it's totally embargoed. We'll have pictures of him kissing the badge and stuff like that. So.
Right. What's kissing the badge mean?
Kissing the badge, like all the footballers.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. Legs, has it got between three and five legs, the dog?
I think we're hoping it's got four.
Right. Well, in the aftermath of Murrayfield, England, Scotland. What an incredible weekend it was everywhere. France and Italy looked incredibly competitive. Wales and Ireland, ditto, with Ireland really, I thought, setting down a marker. Nick, you were at Murrayfield. Did you have a nice journey back?
I had a superb journey back.
Comfortable on the train, was
yep,
it?
Yeah, leisure, first class, yeah. No problems at all.
Yeah, good. On pretty much on time?
Absolutely,
okay.
On the button.
I had a nice journey back as well. I came down with BA. Barnsley and I had a glass of champagne we were offered in the BA lounge. Spot on time, very, very big seats and everything like that. And loved the journey back. Adam, your journey back, nice and comfortable?
How long you got? I stood up.
Not as long as you.
I stood up for 5.5 hours. It was like Sardine City. It was an absolute nightmare. Couldn't even get to the bar until we got past York, which was more of a problem than standing up, to be honest. Yeah, absolute shocker.
Did you, which train company was that? I think they should be named.
It's owned by a bloke with a beard.
Right, okay. So Clement Freud Railway, was it?
Yeah.
Owned by a bloke with a beard? What, do you mean Richard Branson?
I do, yeah.
Okay,
and so... he'll be getting a few letters, but there was a lot of irate punters on there.
So you stood up for how many hours?
5.5.
Right, excellent. Okay, well, that's a... And was that... Did that in any way alleviate the sadness you felt because England lost, or did that make it feel even worse?
I wasn't in a great mood anyway, to be honest, but by the time I got to King's Cross... by the time I got to York and I'd had a drink, I'd settled down a bit. But yeah, it was a nightmare. There was a lot of really upset England fans on there.
Nigel, you gave me an input to the game for free on Saturday because you were texting me during the game and pointing out things. One of the things you said was, before we get onto the technical stuff, you said almost word for word, it's so nice that a game can be still altered or won or lost by sheer passion. Do you think that actually Scotland, with that passion, sort of wanted it more?
I think they did want it more. They always seem to against England. But, you know, it shouldn't be overcome the fact that their technique was great and their tactics were great. The way they went wide against our blitz defence and the way they exploited our poor technique at the breakdown. But yeah, I think passion, it's lovely to see that passion can still win a rugby match. I think it's a bit like the iceberg theory. Every good thing that happened, the crowd lifted them, they lifted each other, and you just got to the stage where you just thought there's no way England are going to win this match.
Another thing you said was, I mean, now and again when you see that two sides in the match have decided not to contest the breakdown, so in other words, when there's a tackle, they all jump to their feet and there's two lines of 15 people all there. Scotland said, to hell with that, we're going to contest. Was that the area where you thought the differences were most marked? Because Scotland piled in and England didn't know how to handle it.
Definitely. I mean, the thing is with the piling in, what I always say to players, you know, if you go, you know, the breakdown is continually changing and Richie McCaw, you know, started the famous jackaling. Now, if you're trying to jackal, the way I see it, there's three most likely outcomes. You win the ball, you get creamed by the opposition, or you get pinged by the ref. Now, I'll ask you, what do you think the least likely of those three are?
To turn the ball over?
Exactly. That's the least. So most teams don't bother. And you know, most coaches will tell you not to bother. But the thing, you've always got to make a nuisance of yourself and, you know, don't give them the ball for nothing. And the best thing is if you think you can quickly snatch it, do, which Scotland did very well, or else counter-ruck and just drive over the top, which Scotland did extremely well. But the fault, I think, is that England's technique is so poor because they're lazy. When they go to ground, for a start, they don't go to ground on their terms. They take ages wrestling to ground. They then have to commit too many men and the ball is too close to Scotland. Whereas if you get the long present where the player is lying lengthways, back facing his own try line, his hands on the ball, it only needs one or two players to go over and anchor over him and Scotland can't counter ruck and can't try and jackal. And I think that's what England do wrong.
The long present, what you mean is you're almost lying parallel to the touchline,
exactly.
not parallel
that's
to the...
That's exactly right. And then you don't give Scotland a sniff of the ball.
Yeah.
And the game would have been completely different. I've never seen England do it. I mentioned to you off air, the last time I saw England a really good long present was Sam Burgess at the World Cup in 2015, and he's a rugby league player. Yet, you know, I respect Steve Borthwick. I'd love to speak to him about it because I just can't understand why I see England so sloppy on the ground. The presentation is awful.
Well, he's not speaking to us, so he'd probably speak to you. He's got all the time in the world. Adam, let's not see this as an England defeat. It was a Scottish victory. They really piled in. Now they were clearly going to set out to run the ball from the back with Hogg, with Maitland, really good attacking players with Hugh Jones, and they really cashed in on that. They made acres of ground out wide. First of all, on a slightly England negative, was that why Jonathan Joseph was not in the team to stop that play because of his tackling and defence at outside centre?
Well, yeah, there is this perception that Joseph is this sort of silky runner, but he's actually in the team because he's supposed to be a good defensive organiser. That's a big thing that Eddie talks about, and it didn't happen on Saturday. They got cut to ribbons. I mean, Russell Jones, I mean, the Jones try was likened. I was listening to the radio commentary in the stand, and I think it was Matt Dawson said that Jones try was like the O'Driscoll one in 2001, when he scored under the post. Yeah. They were just cut to pieces. They've got to sort that out. Don't know how they're going to do it in 2 weeks.
And the trouble is with that, Adam, is, again, like you said, Steve, about you don't commit to the breakdown, so you just defend narrow round the edge and try and force the turnover second or third time round with the double tackles. But what it happens is your defensive line, in the old days, it would have been 9, 10, 12, 13, whereas, of course, you get forwards out in that defensive line. And you had Nathan Hughes standing at centre for that try.
Yeah.
And if you're a forward, your feet aren't as quick. Certainly, you know, a centre's going to roast you every time. So you've got to defend narrower. Whereas there was too big a gap and they were just so badly exposed.
They've also got that press as well, which sometimes leads to dog legs. Joseph was a long way up, for example, when Russell set Jones away, I think, for the before the second try, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, Russell's passing was laser beam accurate. I think his passing was brilliant, and it was a significant difference between the two sides. But for me, the other difference, the word I'd use to sum up England in almost every single aspect of the game is static. They were static in every single department, certainly up front. And, you know, by comparison, the Scots were urgent, they were fierce, and they were much faster. We talk about the loose ball. There's all this stuff that's been going on for years about the fact that now you've got identikit flankers. They showed categorically, as the New Zealanders have and the Australians have, you need open side flankers and fast blind sides as well. You need to be fast to the loose ball, and England are not.
I totally agree with that. Just go back to Scotland for a second. I mean, I have to say that we all knew they were going to try and run from the back, Hogg and Jones and these guys. And I have to say it was joyous. It was exciting because they went for it. And to me, that nailed down my argument. I mean, okay, sometimes people say I'd sound like a broken record, but Mike Brown and his England back three, they are nothing like a team. They're three blokes, one stuck there, one stuck there, and one stuck in the middle. And look, the week before, Mike Brown, fair enough, defended extremely well against Wales. But these days, it is so easy to go up and get a high ball because the opposition, because of the way the laws are played for safety, they can't go up with you. You risk a yellow card, you risk a red card. And England just did not have anything remotely from the back. This thing, the contrast between Brown, who sticks his head down and takes contact, and Hogg, in that sense, was incredible. And I just thought they were joyous, and Hugh Jones, his angles and his composure was superb. But Nick, let's just go back briefly to England-Scotland should always be, with England's forward heritage, driving more, big scrum, putting the finger on Scotland. That did not happen. Are you finding the driving maul attempts that England do now as an embarrassment?
Yes, I thought there's no snap, there's no drive, there's no rumble, and there's no street smartness about what they do at all. For me, the setup was absolutely static most of the time, and when the Scots hung off, England looked flummoxed. They didn't look as if they knew what to do. They didn't advance. They didn't send runners blasting off the side. And when the Scots engaged, you know, because England waited, when they hit them hard and in numbers. And what they did, and it's a classic, you know, I'm sure Nigel, you know, knows better than I do almost, but, you know, they either knocked them backwards because they hit it hard and in numbers, or they knocked them sideways. It's called chopping the log. There's not no offside. You're then in on the ball. And I thought that their technique in the tight loose, you know, the drive, the line out drive, I thought it was really poor. But it's not the only area. The breakdown, their technique, both individually and collectively, isn't good enough. Scotland counter-rucked all day. So even England's ball that England thought that they'd got was very often disrupted. The scrum, Eddie Jones talked before the tournament that this was going to be Dan Cole's, you know, coming of age as a real gnarled veteran, that he was going to cause all sorts of trouble. England have been okay on their own ball. Now, I'm not going to say that they haven't, but they haven't disrupted anybody anywhere. And his stats for a front row forward on Saturday, no meters, no gains at all, that is not good enough at test level these days.
I thought that actually that Simon Bergland, who I didn't know much about for Scotland, looked a real prospect up front as well. But let's just go. Yeah, Nick mentioned Eddie Jones then, Adam. You would see more of Eddie Jones than anyone because, you know, as a daily journalist covering 64 papers a day, you have to go there and listen to him. Now, when I read the transcripts, I hear, first of all, that he's got this new category of player called apprentices. I hate that. That's nothing to do with the national squad as far as I'm concerned. No. Then we hear that David Moyes might be coming in. There's an Australian coming in. There's someone else coming in. Then we hear that there are cameras there, which, as Eddie explained, follow the player to check his body language and what he's doing every moment of the day, except when he's in bed. Is he wasting time here, which he could put to good use coaching England?
These gimmicks and things like that, they do make good copy for us. But you do wonder if they're taking too far sometimes. I mean, bringing people in from other sports, picking other sports brains. Stuart Lancaster did it. He got slaughtered for it when he brought in people like Bradley Wiggins. I don't know if it's because Eddie is an Aussie or because he's perceived as a better coach than Lancaster. But if he does it, it's a stroke of genius. If Lancaster did it, he was a fool, you know.
I think it's because his win-loss record has been such that he's sort of almost been...
Also wonder how many of them he's bringing in or approaching him and want to come and try and learn from England, you know, when he's got such a good record. But I agree with you, Steve. You know, twice we passed to Johnny May, when he was virtually in touch, and another time we passed to Watson, I think it was Brown, and threw it over his head.
Yeah.
And no sign of an old-fashioned switch, which would have worked on all three occasions.
You are very much an attacking coach, quick ball, etc. But I still think, am I old-fashioned in saying that England's heritage is a forward game? You can still just about, despite the cheating opposition, despite the way that the scrum has been depowered, get a grip on the opposition up front with a driving maul and a scrum, etc., and an attacking line-out. Have they given away their heritage here?
Yeah, I think so, because like you say, watching a game from the stands or on the TV, you can't see the sapping effect it has when you have that driving maul and the driving line out and a scrum where you're putting them under pressure. It's wearing you down every single time. It's wearing you down both mentally and physically. You know, if we did have the scrum that Eddie aspires to, teams would be packing down against us thinking, oh God, another scrum. You know, someone knocks on, they're going to think of the pain that's about to be inflicted on them. But there's no sign of it happening.
You know that I've been of the view that the England pack has not been as good as many believe. And while there's no lack of endeavour from players like Dylan Hartley, Cole, Laws, Launchbury and Robshaw, you can be busy in this game without being very effective. And the Scots were busy too, very busy, and they were effective. And I believe that, England are going to have to do something. If they have got aspirations of being world champions in 2019, this is a watershed. And there have got to be changes, in my view, up front. He hasn't got enough front row carriers who are dynamic, and he hasn't got enough back row forwards who are really, you know, strong over the ball, fast, to the breakdown. And I think that it's a serious issue. Although his record is obviously still, the ledger is still massively in his favour, but these defeats are damaging.
Guys, I think we gave that a fair turning over there. Some excellent points. In the cold light of day, England had just lost one game. Scotland won one game, and now Scotland have to go to Ireland, who are playing out of their skins. England have to go to Paris, where they always find fertile ground. So the sun hasn't set forever. Will England now be bold, or will they say what's done us for 24 games might do us for 25 games, or whatever it is? Do you think Eddie now is under pressure to make changes?
He might be under pressure to make changes, and I certainly think there should be a couple. But on Saturday night, he said, "Don't expect too many changes." So he's not going to take any notice of me.
And the couple you would make are?
Well, I'd probably get Underhill in at 7, switch Robshaw to 6, probably give Watson a run at fullback and start Noel, because when England wanted to win that game on Saturday, they stuck Watson at fullback and brought Noel off the bench.
You're leaving, you're leaving the England captain there where he was, taken off after 55 minutes?
He does that every week.
Okay.
I don't know what the big song and dance was about that.
Nick, Adam, fairly conservative there, yeah. with his selections. Would you be a bit bolder if you were Eddie Jones?
Yes, I think I would. I would definitely start. You know, he has to tackle the captaincy issue. He doesn't want to. I would definitely start with George. And I don't know whether Hartley to the bench. And if he produces off the bench in the loose. But England have got too many players who are not really powerful enough. You look at Ireland against Wales, you look at the Irish carrying in all position. They've got carriers in virtually every position in the pack. England don't. You know, Dan Cole's 0 metres tells you everything that you need to know. Hartley won't have made many more.
You want Jamie George, are you keeping Mike Brown?
I don't think I would keep Brown at the moment. And one of the reasons for that would be I'm not totally convinced that he doesn't run well from the back. Occasionally, I think there was certainly a stage where he made yardage all the time, and he still manages to make yardage, but his distribution is just not good enough. And also that ability to pop up in the line and see the line breaks, from, you know, from a distance. So that's my main, you know, my main issues with him. But Watson was not great either against Scotland.
Nigel, coach's point of view, who would you be looking to change?
The main things I would change would be the game plan. You know, it doesn't matter what personnel you've got. Like, for instance, you know, you mentioned Cole. It really winds me up when I see Cole standing a couple of metres to the side of a ruck, standing still, already marked, flat pass to him, and he goes to ground. You know, I'd like to see our forward runners coming round the corner. You know, Mako Vunipola is the only one with the hands to do the nice little out the back pass or the wraparound.
Sure.
We've scored tries off that in
and
the
we
past.
Scored one on Saturday, yeah, as a result of it again. You
exactly.
Know,
from, we just need, yeah, to be a bit clever in some of the things we're doing. I agree with Nick on Mike Brown. You know, I always compare Mike Brown to American football. He's an absolutely brilliant punt returner. You know, in American football, they'd have him on for the punt return and then you'd have somebody else in your attacking game, because I agree with you. He'll run the ball back with interest. If you're a forward, you'll love him because you'll see the ball get hoofed over your head and you haven't got to turn around because he'll run back past you and you can re-win it. But he goes to ground. He needs to be delivering scoring passes. But, and as Nick says, coming into the line and, you know, scoring tries, coming between the centres.
I said 2 weeks ago that this team had reached its upper limit. I'm absolutely certain they have. And I would have Watson at fullback because he's far more comfortable at fullback than he is on the, yeah, wing. He's far more involved. Benti or must at outside centre. They've spent 2 years trying to work out if he's good or not. He must start in Paris. I'd have Richard Wigglesworth because I think he's easily the most accomplished player and the best box kicker. And I'm afraid we're going to have to start finding out about some people. Now, Harry Williams conceded a penalty when he came on at tight end prop, which wasn't very, very good. But we're going to have to find out because Harry is a big and active lad. And he's got to be, anyone could contribute more than Dan Cole.
Stevie,
and they've
also
got to put Don Armand in because they've got to get an Irish, big Irish-like forward to drive the ball and to start giving it back to the opposition, sticking it up their noses. And England don't. Underhill I have reservations for, but they have got to play him because he's the nearest thing they got to a flanker. So what's that, seven changes probably?
Well, for me, as soon as Simmons is back on, back from injury, I would have their two players bracketed for the seven shirt. One is Underhill and the other one is Simmons. They need speed at seven. They've got to quicken up. And, you know, it's a prerequisite. You look at, I mean, Barkley on Saturday for Scotland, Barkley is a seven. He's a seven by, you know, for all his career. He's slowed down a bit, so he's now at six, but his instincts are a seven. Hamish Watson is a seven.
Yeah.
So they had two on the field. And Ryan Wilson also plays at seven quite a lot. And the three of them, I mean, between them, they must have won 10 turnovers, at least, of English ball.
Let's just move on. Scotland, there's no hiding place in international rugby. Adam, very, very difficult to play Ireland, especially when they're scenting a Grand Slam.
Gregor Townsend was talking about after the game on Saturday, he said, you know, it's all very well winning at Murrayfield, but we've got to start winning on the road. They've got a sneak, but they are bang up against it because Ireland are playing well they dominated Wales despite the scoreline. Mm. Ireland are playing well despite missing about five Lions.
Nigel, we're talking about, Nick was talking about ball carriers there. Front row is still so important. If you can get a ball carrier who's also can scrummage well, you're in. You look at the Irish, they got the Porter came in instead of Furlong on Saturday. Never heard of him before, not very much. Played really, really well. They got a choice between Kian Healy and Jack McGrath on the loose head. Both of them are carriers. Furlong is a carrier. They've now got John Ryan, the prop. So many big, hard, mobile forwards there. On Saturday, James Ryan, the new lock, looked like he was in business. Aren't they light years ahead of the other teams trying to develop the proper players for the new era?
Yeah, and again, part of that is the game plan. I mean, even Devon Toner, if you stood Devon Toner in a room with a pair of shorts on next to Mario Itoje, there'd be no comparison. You know, what an athlete Mario Itoje is. Yet we don't use him as a carrier. I mean, if you saw Mario Itoje, you'd think you could give him the ball and he could run half the length of the pitch, taking half the opposition with him. But he never does.
I'm intrigued by this because I think that Jones has got... I mean, Ireland have developed real depth. There's no question about that. And you could see that in the game against Scotland. But England have got phenomenal depth. They've got possibly more depth than any other country. I'm not sure that Jones is tapping into that depth as he needs to at the moment. He has blooded quite a lot of players. You look at the Argentina tour and so on. But when push comes to shove, he goes back to base all the time. I mean, I'm just looking at an England third team that I picked on this last weekend. Alec Hepburn. He's dropped down the pecking order because Marla's come back and Mako Vunipola. Mako looks a bit tired to me. I'd certainly consider jazzing it up at Loosehead. Luke Cowan-Dickie, probably of all the English hookers on the hoof, the strongest. He's not a distributor of the ball like George. George can play. Hepburn's a bit more straight up and down, but in terms of sheer power, if you want a bloke who can carry through a couple of people, then Cowan-Dickie can do it. You know, England have got these guys. Sinclair, he's just come back from injury. I'm not sure, you know, he's certainly not played particularly well yet, but we saw on the Lions tour that he's got speed, he's got dynamism. You know, we've got lots. You look at the extra lock, Johnny Hill, who's not even, you know, featuring in anything. Callum Green, who's, you know, the Newcastle boy, who's a real boots and braces.
Are you saying that selection's wrong?
I'm saying that he could be more adventurous and give hope to a few more, you know, more blokes who are producing week in, week out in the Premiership.
Okay, let's just reflect on the France Island game. One name was on everybody's lips, Mathieu Bastereau. He's been in trouble for various reasons. Doesn't look like he does an awful lot of training or diet stuff, really. But how effective is he? I mean, Adam, you were studying it carefully.
Well, he was great. I mean, he was picked by default because Brunel took the moral high ground about eight of his players going on the sauce in Edinburgh.
On the sauce?
On the sauce.
Was that the official?
That
was the official citation.
Maybe that's what
I asked. World rugby penalties for sauce.
Bastereau came in and he was terrific. I mean, he is a lump, and if he plays against England, he's going to cause them some damage because he can pass with three tacklers hanging off him.
It must be bad for the soul watching France the last 15 years because we know what they should be able to do, but they don't. Is there any signs that they're getting some sort of balance between the clod-hopping game and some of the old flair they used to have?
Teddy Thomas is there with the flair, isn't he? And yeah, they have got a strong pack. I can't believe that Brunel doesn't want to play pick-a-mole. I think, you know, pick-a-mole does what Bastereau does, which is carries strongly but offloads. Yeah, and again, offloading is something I think is a weak part of England's game because nowadays defences are so rammed. You know, an offload is one great way of opening a defence because, you know, you can commit two defenders and put a teammate who makes a nice late angled run through the gap where the defenders were. And Bastereau will always do that.
I was going to say, if you're as big as Bastereau, you pull in about six or seven.
Yeah.
And he did before the offload out of the back to Bonneval.
Maybe you should have more sauce then. If you
yeah, exactly.
We've not touched on Wales very much. There is a theory gaining ground that Wales were never going to be at the top of the table this year, although they're in mid-table. But my theory when I said that England had reached the top of their resources because they didn't appear to have any world-class to come in is the opposite of Wales, because Wales, lest we forget, have got seven Lions who are currently unavailable, including three or four of the best players in the world. Now, Wales, in a way, only have to finish mid-table this year to think anxious. They play World Cups very well. So, Nick, not all gloomy for Wales?
No, I definitely don't think it's all gloomy for Wales. And I think that if they could uncover just a couple more heavy-duty, heavy-carrying front five forwards, that they'd be in clover.
I think that Wales would settle for the Irish third-choice loosehead and tighthead.
VoiceOver describes what's happening on your iPhone screen.
VoiceOver on, settings.
So you can navigate it just by listening.
Books, contacts, calendar, double tap to open. Breakfast with Anna from 10 to 11.
And get on with your day. Accessibility, there's more to iPhone.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
One or two people who we really enjoyed watching. First of all, I really enjoyed watching Nigel Owen because I thought he was absolutely superb as a referee. Also, Sebastian Negri really impressed me. Arguably the new Sergio Parisse. I thought he was absolutely brilliant against France. And the Scots backs, blimey, that was worth a trip to go up there. Adam, who did you see that you loved on the weekend?
Well, I don't necessarily think he should be playing for Ireland, but he's a hell of an effective carrier and he is going to cause some real damage. And that's Bundyaki. He was all over the shop on Saturday. Very, very powerful. And one who didn't play in internationals, who you'll love me to say this, Steve, is I watched the Premiership highlights last night and Don Armand again was terrific. And he scored a fantastic try running in from the 22 and sidestepping the fullback.
It seems to me the better he plays, the less further away he is from England. Nick?
I thought John Barkley was captain fantastic for the Scots. I think that, Barkley, obviously, I mean, the game against Wales, he was out of it completely. He got shut out because his Scarlets teammates knew exactly what sort of threat that he posed, and they made sure that he was not just double teamed, but probably quadruple teamed every time he got near the breakdown. But I thought that his breakdown work was absolutely fantastic, but not just that. He tackled everything that moved in white, and his leadership by, that classic leadership by example. Scotland had a leader who was producing the whole time, and Dylan Hartley, I'm afraid, wasn't in that category.
Nige.
I think I'm going to go Finn Russell because, as you say, it was a great victory for Scotland. Yeah, they did well at the breakdown, but he came into the game under question. And he delivered, and they won all that ball, probably more ball than they expected to. So a lot of that was off the cuff, and England defend very narrow with their rugby league type blitz defence. And, the Maitland try was a classic example. Dylan Hartley was talking about a rectangle. It's a very wide rectangle. Most teams just play down the middle, whereas if you think he steered that play out to the right, almost to the touchline, then rewound, then the long pass, I just thought that was superb, the way he marshalled the backs and, made the most, launched his runners.
There's no doubt as to the awful villain of the weekend, Richard Branson. Thank you for conveying my colleague, Mr. Branson, for 11 hours with no seat and no sauce, as Adam would put it. But Nige, as a proud London Irishman, well, you're not an Irishman, but you're a proud London Irishman, they beat Worcester on the weekend. Is it too late? I mean, we all know that actually they're a great club in the making there. Is it too late?
It looks like it. Yeah, it's hard to believe that they can dig themselves out of this one. It's also hard to believe, looking back to the first game of the season that I covered at Twickenham, where they comprehensively outplayed Harlequins, and you thought, welcome back, this is it. And it just almost inconceivable to think they haven't won since. They've been desperately unlucky with injuries. But I think it's, a case of the haves and the have-nots. They haven't got the playing squad. They
the other teams are more Man City. It's it's just a real shame. But I hope they do bounce back, because I think down they are going to go.
And before I ask you guys for your just last impressions of the weekend, and if the Six Nations is in rude health, I just want to mention Worcester, who lost the Worcester. There's rumours that they're going to be bought by the Scottish Rugby Union, who have no idea what professional rugby is. It couldn't even spell it. And Worcester, to me, and people have told me this who know the financial scene, they say there is a club there. There is a definite thriving rugby club there. What are the people in charge there currently doing? Are they going to sell it to someone who's got more ambition than them, or are they going to run it down? Because that is a great club which is going to find itself in trouble. So coupled with the name of Richard Branson, we'll have the people on the Worcester board. Please sell the club to someone who knows what they're doing, or invest in it yourself, because it is a great club. That's my sermon for the day. Six Nations, love it or hate it, it's back with a bang on the weekend. Nigel, do we sometimes underestimate the impact that it has?
It's still great. The trouble is, when you've got a World Cup looming, everybody's looking ahead to that rather than just savouring it for what it is.
No, Nick, should we be savouring these games? Well, because it was thrilling on the weekend.
Yes, it was, absolutely. And I you know, the way that Scotland played with that sort of ferocity and elan, you've now got a fascinating prospect of England having to go to Paris to pick up their challenge again, and to see whether they can translate themselves into this world champion side that they hope they can be. You know, it's fascinating.
Adam, car or bus next time, maybe?
It might be in the back of your motor, but I'll tell you what, one thing about the Six Nations, it might not give us the World Cup winner next year, but the Southern Hemisphere would kill to have a tournament like this.
Absolutely kill for it. And finally, it was the start of the Super Rugby season this weekend. Cheerio.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.